This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Prevention Magazine brings you great advice on healthy living, proper nutrition, safe exercise, and a positive lifestyle. Learn tips from leading researchers and enjoy your life for years to come. Prevention Magazine, coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Prevention Magazine, and I'm your reader, Francie Kiever, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from Prevention, October, copyright 2025, Hearst Magazines, Incorporated. And now, I'll begin with your October to-do list. Spruce up your spot. Having a tidy home can help you be more productive and feel calmer, studies say. So do a little cleaning ahead of holiday and hibernation season. Make common areas guest ready and give other rooms where you spend a lot of time, like the kitchen, bathrooms, and bedrooms, some TLC. Roll up your sleeve. It's best to have your flu shot by the end of October so as to get the best protection possible by the time flu season reaches a fever pitch. It's recommended that everyone 6 months and up get the flu vaccine. You can get a jab at urgent care centers, community clinics, and drugstores like CVS and Walgreens. Enjoy one final fix. Many farmer markets operate through the start of fall, so grab a last batch of this year's farm fresh produce. Superfoods now hitting their peak, root veggies like turnips, parsnips, and carrots, dark leafy greens, Brussels sprouts, and other picks, grapes, and of course, apples. Be vocal about the pause. World Menopause Day is October 18th, and you can help smash the stigma around this natural stage in a woman's life. Attend an event. Search on eventbrite.com, eventbrite.com, for local ones. Donate to research. Visit the Menopause Society at menopause.org, or gather your girls for a coffee or wine convo and share tips about dealing with all the changes. On to prevention wellness. Five myths behind recent food headlines. The bold-faced words make you want to click, but will all these things really make you sick? Listen on for the truth behind these scary-sounding but overblown, oversimplified, and just plain false news items. Myth number one. Eating red meat is a direct route to dementia. Mythbuster. If the word processed were in there before red meat, that statement would be a lot closer to true. The study earlier this year that rang major alarm bells mainly came down on processed red meat, which includes hot dogs, salami, sausage, bologna, and bacon. After analyzing data from more than 130,000 people over 43 years, scientists found that the biggest processed red meat eaters, who averaged around 3/4 of an ounce of it a day, the equivalent of about half a slice of bacon or a quarter of a hot dog or more, had a 13% higher chance of developing dementia than those who ate the least. They also had lower cognitive function and faster brain aging. The study didn't explain why this was, but Jasmine Dow, M.D., Ph.D., a neurologist at Miller's Children's and Women's Hospital in Long Beach, California, points out that high levels of fat and sodium, processed meat is full of broth, have been linked to poor brain health. Diets high in saturated fat are tied to brain inflammation and poor cognitive performance. As for burgers and steaks, there's no proven link to dementia, but red meat does have saturated fat, also bad for the heart, so it's smart to eat it only every now and then and choose the leanest cut possible and make processed meat an even rarer pick. Myth number two, you should avoid all processed foods. Mythbuster. It's not so simple. The U.S. Department of Agriculture defines as processed any foods altered from their natural state, even by freezing, dicing, and heating. So a bag of baby spinach and that Greek yogurt with no added sugar are processed. It also includes canned fruit, veggies, and fish, which can be part of a healthy diet. Ultra-processed foods, generally defined as industrially produced foods with ingredients not found in people's kitchens, have been linked to a host of ailments, such as type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Focus on the foods you want to eat more of, vegetables and fruit, 100% whole grains, lean proteins, unsweetened dairy, legumes, pulses, nuts, and seeds, advises Jacqueline London, MS, RD. When in doubt about a packaged food, ask yourself, could I make a version of this at home? Choose the products that come closest to that. Myth number three. Seed oils up your risk of diabetes, obesity, and other diseases. Mythbuster. Decades of research have proven seed oils' health benefits. They have omega-6 fatty acids, which raise inflammation risk when consumed in excess. But these fats also boost heart health and may reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes and some cancers. Polyunsaturated fats like omega-6s play an essential role in the structure and function of our cell membranes, says Allison Kane, RDN, of Massachusetts General Hospital. Simply have omega-3-rich foods such as walnuts and salmon to balance things out. And no, phytoestrogens in soybean oil won't throw off hormone levels as it contains negligible amounts of these, says Scott Keatley, RD, co-owner of Keatley Medical Nutrition Therapy. Just avoid heating seed oils to smoking as they can form harmful compounds. The same can happen with olive oil, which is not a seed oil. Myth number four. Your favorite chocolate is full of harmful metals. Mythbuster. You'd have to eat tons of it to suffer any harm. It is true that several studies by Consumer Reports and George Washington University found concerning levels of cadmium and/or lead in some chocolate products, including chocolate bars, brownie mixes, and cocoa powders. And yes, it's depressing to think that your cozy cup of hot cocoa may contain metals that could harm your health, especially after we've heard for years that dark chocolate is good for us. But here are the facts. Cadmium winds up these products because it is naturally found in the soil the cocoa beans are grown, says Vasilis Vassilou, PhD, a toxicology expert at the Yale School of Public Health. And lead can get into beans during harvesting and manufacturing. High levels of cadmium have been linked to breast cancer and kidney disease, and lead is known to lower kids' IQs. But you won't reach dangerous amounts by having a little chocolate every day, says Vassilou. Because of the added sugars and fat in it, your sweet spot is about an ounce of dark chocolates a day, says Jeffrey Tessin, PhD of flavonoids researcher at Brigham Young University. Myth number 5. Bananas should not be used in smoothies. The study on which this statement is based involved just 8 guys. Its small sample size isn't enough to really tell us anything, says Karen Ansel, RD. What's more, she says, bananas have all kinds of health benefits, so there's no reason to leave them out of your smoothies. They're rich in potassium, a mineral we need for healthy blood pressure that few of us get enough of. So why all the social media commotion? The research found that when bananas and flavonoid-rich fruits, such as berries, were combined in a smoothie, the flavonoids weren't well absorbed by the 8 guys' bodies. Flavonoids are powerful, heart-protective, and anti-inflammatory compounds. If these findings are replicated in large studies, says Ansel, and you love your banana smoothie, simply eat more fruit that contains flavonoids throughout the day. Next in wellness, the upshot cell phone radiation. There's a tenacious fear that our devices cause brain cancer, but is there truth to that idea? By Madeline Hase and Gina Way. Ever since we started holding our cell phones up to our ears, there have been concerns that the radio waves they emit could cause cancer. While this makes sense in Black Mirror kind of way, and some might have struck with their landlines at first, after more than 2 decades of our yakking on mobiles, extensive scientific evidence fails to support the idea that phones add to radiation risks for the human body. The conversation has flared up again because the World Health Organization, WHO, recently released a large-scale systematic review of all the research on the topic. Scientists examined 63 studies from 22 countries published between 1994 and 2022. The focus was on brain cancer and other cancers of the central nervous system, including gliomas, meningiomas, acoustic neuromas, and pituitary tumors. Researchers reported that despite the large increase in the use of wireless technology in the past 2 decades, there had not been any corresponding increase in brain cancer risk. What's more, neither the frequency nor the duration of subjects' calls were linked to cancer. There were also no increased risk of brain tumors or leukemia in kids exposed to cell towers or radio and TV transmitters, despite rumors. So how did this worry begin in the first place? As with many urban legends, it was rooted in a legitimate concern about radio frequency radiation and a decision to be cautious about it until more was known. In 2011, the WHO's International Agency for Research on Cancer classified exposure to radio waves as possibly carcinogenic. Per the IARC, this means only there could be some risk, and therefore we need to keep a close watch for a link between cell phones and cancer risk, a better safe than sorry approach. Now, 14 years later, we have the information to make a clearer determination. The most recent WHO review of studies confirms that what many suspected, says Daniel Landau, MD, a board-certified hematologist and oncologist at the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. The radiation from cell phones is of a type known as non-ionizing radiation. The more dangerous types, such as the ones that come from nuclear bombs or other nuclear material, are ionizing, Dr. Landau explains. And exposure to ionizing radiation is what causes the DNA damage that may lead to cancer. The non-ionizing type, which microwave ovens also emit, has too little energy to be dangerous. So don't worry about getting brain cancer from your cell phone, though Dr. Landau nonetheless advises limiting the time for which you hold the phone next to your head, as there may be other risks the study did not pick up on. Still, he says, I feel that a study like this offers us reassurance, adding that a clear link between cell phones and brain cancer would likely have emerged by now if one existed. If you're still concerned using headphones, earbuds, or the speakerphone function will slash your radiation exposure, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. On to prevention health, my diagnosis. I had never seen so much blood. For this mom of a toddler, scarily heavy periods and major anxiety had a surprising explanation by Jen Hyde. In July 2020, when I was 35, my period changed dramatically. What long had been a regular four-day event was suddenly a four-hour waterfall of vicious blood clots before it stopped abruptly. During those hours, I changed my tampon every 20 minutes. Sometimes it was hard to keep up. When my husband saw me scrubbing my jeans in the sink, he said, "My gosh, it looks like a murder scene." We had just moved across the country for my husband's job, and while he worked long hours, I cared for our two-year-old son. I was so stressed about all those life changes that my physical health was the last thing on my mind. So for the next several months, I simply endured these four-hour waterfall periods. Then, in April 2021, I borrowed my father-in-law's truck to move a piece of furniture. And while I sat in traffic, I felt my period start, then leak onto the driver's seat. Mortified, I wiped away tears as I cleaned the seat, and I promised myself, if these stains come out, I will seek help. I cleaned the truck successfully and soon afterward found a gynecologist who ordered blood tests and ultrasounds. When the results came back normal, she ordered progesterone to reset my period to normal. But before I had even taken the progesterone, I got my period, and this time it was mild. The next month, it was mild again. The gynecologist told me my waterfall periods might have been due to postpartum hormonal fluctuations, even 2 years after my son's birth, and I felt relieved that the crisis had passed. Worry became anxiety. Not long after that, though, I developed anxiety and started doing some strange things. When I read about an accident on a bridge we drove over regularly, I stopped driving to activities on the other side of it. In 2022, I was seeing a therapist to help me cope, and she told me that my anxiety was environmental and that managing full-time childcare had left me overwhelmed. Given that my son was about to return to preschool, she encouraged me to find part-time work as something else to focus on. I found freelance writing assignments, but my anxiety loomed, and I felt like a failure for not magically feeling better. In June 2023, I missed a period, then another the next month. I knew I wasn't pregnant, but took a pregnancy test anyway. We had changed insurance providers, so I made an appointment with a new general practitioner. The nurse who checked me in at their office urged me to ask about menopause, which surprised me. At 38, wasn't I too young for that? Still, while waiting for the doctor, I Googled menopause in your 30s, and the results alarmed me. I read that early menopause could increase the risk of other health issues such as heart disease and osteoporosis. I expected my doctor to be concerned, but when I brought it up, she chuckled and said I was too young, insisting a missed period or two is no big deal. I trusted her, but after I missed two more periods, she told me to take another pregnancy test and gave me the number for the gynecology office. 6 months later, I spoke with the gynecologist who prescribed progesterone to try to reset my period once again, as well as blood tests to be done on the second day of a bleed. But she didn't tell me what she was looking for. Then, a week later, she retired. For 2 weeks, I was frustrated and scared, and when I got the lightest trace of a period, I took the blood tests. A new gynecologist called with the results. My FSH levels were high at menopausal levels. I didn't know what any of this meant, though I learned later that FSH is short for follicle-stimulating hormone, which stimulates the growth of follicles in the ovary each month. All I heard was menopause, the very word my previous doctor had brushed off. This can't be right, I insisted. I told her about the postpartum waterfall periods the year before, and my GP's insistence that a missed period was no big deal. She listened politely, then explained that I was of perimenopausal age. The heavy periods were likely early symptoms of perimenopause, and I was now probably near menopause and needed to wait it out. I asked about the risk of early menopause, but the gynecologist said that at 38, I was basically 40 and wouldn't need any different treatment. After our call, I burst into tears. I trusted the test results, but I felt that she was ignoring my concerns. From diagnosis to empowerment. Determined not to brush off, I learned all I could on my own. I felt sick thinking about anxiety had begun controlling me when my son was small. I worried if I waited out perimenopause, anxiety would permanently alter my brain. Then I read that perimenopause symptoms could be treated with HRT, hormone replacement therapy, and HRT was crucial for menopausal women under 40. I wanted to start HRT, but the gynecologist wanted me to wait until I was fully in menopause, reasoning that there wasn't yet enough research on the use of HRT in perimenopause. I found a new gynecologist who diagnosed me with primary ovarian insufficiency. My ovaries had stopped working normally years before I should have expected to enter menopause. She prescribed HRT consisting of an estradiol patch I was to change twice weekly, along with a progesterone IUD. 2 months later, my anxiety finally subsided. My periods came back irregular, but it is now unclear whether they are true periods or I have them because HRT. I turned 40 this year. Since I still bleed occasionally, I don't know whether I'm officially in menopause. But when I asked, my new gynecologist told me, what matters most is how you feel. I feel content, though I sometimes wish I could relive the years when my son was small. He is still young enough that people ask if we'll have more children. I explain that we won't, and that I love what we have, one beautiful child and one beautiful life. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Francie Keever with Prevention. I hope you enjoyed today's reading from the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.